First, let me welcome all of you and the graduating class, and to thank Doug Ahlers for that terrific talk today. The tradition in American commencements is to give someone from the institution the last word before delivering diplomas, in hopes that if everything else has failed at the 11th hour, something will get through. <laughs> 150 years ago this month, on May 6, 1856, Sigmund Freud, the founder of psychoanalysis, one of the towering figures in 20th century thought, was born. His influence on the way we speak about ourselves, the mental picture he helped draw about the mind and the causes of behavior, remains in the idea of the unconscious, the ego, the superego, repression, and the way we understand childhood, innocence, dreams, and memory. His legacy survives in the way we view the world more than in the manner in which we treat mental illness or understand the science of the brain. During the last two decades of his career, from the end of the First World War to his death in 1939, just after the outbreak of World War II, Freud shifted his attention from the psychodynamics of the individual to the question of the fate of society and humankind. Overwhelmed by the senselessness and carnage of World War I, he sought to understand the persistence of aggression and violence in our society, despite the advent of progress in science and the expansion of learning. Freud, who made his career at the turn of the century by having placed eros, sexuality, at the causal core of human action, added a second basic human instinct, death, thanatos. The challenge would be whether in society we could find realistic ways to satisfy not only an erotic instinct, but a self-destructive death instinct in human nature, in a way that could ensure less destruction, aggression, and death. In 1930, Freud observed that humanity had the technical means to destroy humankind down to the last person. Yet he refused to succumb to a facile determinism that by nature and design, human history was doomed. Yet as we look back at the nearly 70 years since his death, we find little cause for optimism. Not technological progress in the instruments of war and death, such as nuclear weapons or smart bombs, has transpired and persisted, but old habits of hate, fear, and cruelty, each leading to killing, persist, fueling elaborate justifications for war, torture, and death. One thinks not only of terrorism in Iraq, the genocide in the Balkans and Africa, but of our fantastic romance with violence in entertainment that oddly does little to mitigate our behavior. Privilege and affluence seem not enough to ensure tolerance and peace. But Freud was not a pessimist. He believed, as he wrote Einstein in the early 30s, that humanity had the capacity to generate ideals and images of community to which our instinctual energies could be successfully transferred, such as freedom, individuality, culture, and learning, higher callings that would occupy us, define our self-respect, and deflect us from the envy and rage that are satisfied only by the pain, suffering, and death of those whom we label our enemies and competitors. Freud predicted that the challenge in modern times was extreme because science had rendered the most successful foundation for social and communal life, not for peace and tolerance, religion obsolete. But what would fill the vacuum left by religion, he asked, confident of its demise? The expectation by Freud and his generation of an irreversible secularization has not been met. Instead, we see a tense return to rudimentary religious faith. We face a world of extensive literacy in which blind faiths and superstitions compete against apparent emptiness and cold hypotheses, discoveries and doubts of reason and science. Can human existence just be the result of random chance? Freud had no confidence in religion as a key to the end of human aggression, but he did place faith in our capacity to use language, not merely to talk, but to trigger thinking out of words. Language was the divining rod of ideas. It was the mother, not the mistress of thought, as Freud's contemporary Karl Kraus observed. It was a legitimate instrument of truth and agreement. Language also invents the unimaginable and constructs hope. But most importantly, it must do so not in some lazy, stylized manner, but with meanings that have validity and arguments we can grasp without coercion and with clarity. Nothing is so difficult as communicating with one another in language and ceasing to say things just by habit or out of thoughtlessness, saying things that are or lies. Indeed, we need language to make progress against the possibility that Freud's fear was, whether by war or environmental neglect, so that humankind will not destroy itself to the last person. That language is not only the language of science, but that of politics and art. The education you've received here at Simon's Rock has trained you in the use of language as the inhuman instrument of thought and hope. The diplomas that go with it constitute a tacit contract between each of you and all of humankind to further a conversation that began in sacred speech, legends, myth, and revelation, was sustained through the conduct of philosophy and literature, and has been kept going in science and scholarship. You must fight the corruption of language in commerce and journalism. What you say and how you say it will be the measures of human belief and human dignity. Your language must form a basis of action for you that's neither habitual nor thoughtless. You have lost, with this diploma, the right to ignorance and apathy. Most of all, by coming forward to accept a diploma, you have lost the right as a citizen to silence. For that, we are grateful and we congratulate you today.